listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Wisdom Podcast with our guest, Helen Dennis. Helen is a nationally recognized leader on issues of aging, employment, and retirement with academic, corporate, and nonprofit experience. She has received awards for her university teaching at USC's Davis School and for her contributions to the field of aging, the community, and literary arts. She has edited 2 books and written more than 100 articles and has frequent speaking engagements. Helen is the weekly columnist on successful aging for the Southern California Newspaper Group and has assisted more than 15,000 employees in preparation for the non-financial aspects of retirement. In her volunteer life, she has served as president of 5 nonprofit organizations. Fully engaged in the field of aging, she was a delegate to a White House conference on aging and is co-author of the Los Angeles Times bestseller Project Renewment, the first retirement model for career women. Helen has extensive experience with the media, including Primetime, NPR, Network News, The Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, Sacramento Bee, and Christian Science Monitor. She recently has been recognized by PBS's Next Avenue as one of the 50 influencers in aging. Helen, thanks so much for your time today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that should do it.
Helen, thanks so much for joining us. And before we start, congratulations on 18 years, the 18th year anniversary of Successful Aging. Great column.
Well, thank you. You know, I should add that I've written almost 900 weekly columns. And I said, who does this to themselves once a week for 18 years? But obviously, it's gratifying sufficiently to continue publishing them.
Absolutely. Very valuable content. One thing I noticed is you've retired the term retirement and replaced it with a better one. Could you please tell us a little bit about the term you created and why you created it?
Well, this really emanated from the very beginning of this small movement called Renewment. It was a result of 10 women sitting around the table talking about that transition from work to retirement. And we did not feel comfortable with the term retirement. It suggested to us being on the periphery of life, not being in the mainstream. And all of these are pretty successful women. We said, this, we don't relate. So it just kind of happened where someone said renew and someone said retirement. And we said, well, renewment. This makes sense. It's a combination of retirement and renewal. And renewal is the core of this, looking at opportunities, looking at choices, looking at vitality. And that's really what we wanted to convey. And the traditional retirement term just didn't do it. So we made it up.
And what's the story behind Project Renewment and how does it work?
Okay, so here's the backstory. It goes back to 1999. I get a call from a good colleague and friend, Bernice Browder. She has just left her second position, executive director of the Women's Foundation. She calls me and she says, Helen, and this is a very well put together lady. She said, Helen, has anything been done? Now you figure this is about almost 20 years ago. Has anything been done for career women who have been passionate about their work, just love what they're doing, and now they're going to retire, and you say, okay, what is next? Is there any research, any projects, any programs? And I said, to my knowledge, I don't think we're even on the radar screen. So we said, well, let's have lunch. Maybe there's something to talk about. We had a 4-hour lunch. Clearly, there was a lot to discuss. She said, well, why don't you invite some like-minded women. I'll do the same. We'll have dinner at my house and see if there's anything here. Well, it was a 4-hour dinner. And we proceeded to meet on a monthly basis, talking about issues and concerns as well as opportunities in that very significant move from full-time work that you absolutely love to what is next. And that's how Renewment began. If you want to know how it works, typically 8 to 10 women get together, usually in someone's home, and you pick a topic. and you talk about that topic from every aspect, whether it is identity, you could say your personal stories, it could be through literature, it could be political. You really talk about a topic in the most significant, comprehensive way, as well as a personal way. So we met, we actually met for, well, this group one has been meeting for 20 years. We had no intention of growing. We just wanted a forum of good conversation. And some other women in Los Angeles found out about this group and said, can we join? Well, it's hard to join in the middle of a group. We said, we'll help you start a group. Well, that just has grown virally, and today there are between 35 and 40 renewment groups throughout the country, some meeting 2 years, some meeting 20 years. And so this has grown virally, and it continues because the issues and opportunities for career women in retirement is not something that is typically discussed. We have a lot of male models, but we don't have a lot of female models. So that's really how Renewment began, and it continues.
And what are the big themes that you see emerging in the groups?
You know, it depends on the life stage. So when we started, this was the transition from work to retirement, okay? And the typical discussion points were, who am I without my business card? What does productivity mean? What if he retires first? Who will be there for me? Transitional topics. So in retrospect, what I realized is that we did something more than the work to retirement, because people are in this, I mean, like there's no graduation, because transition and change is part of life. So what we realized is that there are different themes according to life stage. So that was kind of the first phase, maybe early 60s, mid-60s. You move to the 70s, mid-70s, early 70s, people are talking more about practical issues, housing choices, financial security, caregiving. Okay, that's the 70s, pretty practical issues. Let's go to the late 70s. We found the conversations became more existential, meaning my legacy, my purpose in life. Am I living the life I want to live? Then we have women who are in their 80s, and a lot of the discussion is on health. It seems that health really plays a major role, health and function, and the resources and support to be the best you can be, regardless of health issues or limitations. So the topics change with the life stage. And what we realize in retrospect, although we wanted this a work-to-retirement platform, we really inadvertently developed a platform to support career women through transition and change throughout their lifetime. And I have to say that was a shock. We said, we didn't even know we did that. But let me add one other thing, which was one of those unintended consequences. We inadvertently developed these small communities of women that are enduring. They learn from each other, and they're there for each other. And what we know about social isolation in later life, these women have a community. So I would say that was definitely an unintended but very positive consequence. So it's a little bit more than you asked for, but in retrospect, we are really thrilled that this has happened so organically and by word of mouth. And I would add, the need is still there. I have not spoken to a woman who has loved her work who doesn't resonate with this Renewment theme.
I noticed on your website that there's also a men's life transition group that you meet with jointly from time to time. What are the issues you see with men in this phase of life that are different from women?
So it's a good question. Let me just tell you, their beginning was kind of unintentional also. Two senior advertising executives are riding their bike along the Redondo Beach bike path here in Southern California, and they're saying, oh my God, we love our work. What are we going to do? And they put together a group of 25 men, mostly successful businessmen, to talk about the transition and change. And so what's so much fun is they invite the life transition group, invite our Renewment women to a once-a-year discussion group. We sit around a table of 16 seats in a conference room, 8 for them, 8 for us, and we talk. And so the topics are really relevant to both men and women. Who has been most instrumental in my life? What are the challenges we face at this life stage? What is the advice we would give to people making this transition? And what I always listen for is their is there really a gender difference between men and women? And my observation is, in general, not so much, but what is different, what I find when it comes to relationships, the men say, how do you do it? You know, it seems so natural to you. One commented, he says, I've been playing tennis with a tennis partner for 8 years. I know nothing about him. I see women on the tennis court. They play with each other for 2 weeks, and they have a relationship. He said, how do you women do it? So I think one of the differences is how women relate to others and seek new friendships very easily. And also the nature of the discussion. The men said, you know, we talk about politics and we talk about cars and we talk about travel. And the women said, well, we talk about everything. And it takes us about 2 minutes to get into the issues. So it's what the men talk about, what the women talk about, and how quickly women get to issues and concerns of this life stage. It's one of the differences. But I'll add, it is a love fest. We think they are fabulous, and they think we are terrific. So we have a good time, and we always learn from each other, and that's really gratifying and fun.
That's terrific. And the book that you co-authored, Project Renewment, has 38 wonderful essays in it. One that jumped out to me is an intriguing one titled The Illusion of Freedom. People really look forward to having more time for themselves in retirement, yet other life events can get in the way and delay that. What do people need to anticipate and plan for that might end up taking center stage in their retirement?
Well, I think there's this feeling, particularly if you've had a pressure job, if you're commuting in Los Angeles, if you've had, you know, 12 changes in management, that you can breathe and say, oh my God, I am finally free. You know, I can sleep longer. I can breathe. I don't have to hyperventilate. And so there is this, you know, great feeling of freedom. And then the unexpected occurs. The unexpected, you know, adult children move home for whatever reason, okay? We have grandparents raising grandchildren. And the biggest one that seems to move into this space of freedom is caregiving. So I think what we need to be prepared for is that freedom is not 100% of everything. We may have freedom in spirit, freedom in movement, freedom in thought, but we do have responsibilities. And the biggest one that seems to come in is caregiving, either for your mate or partner or for your parents or your in-law parents. And I think one of the things that can help is finances. If we have, at a minimum, the financial security to get the support and help that we need. And that's not to say there aren't, you know, support groups that don't charge, but if we need household help, if we need aides, if we need a special consultant, to have the financial freedom to get what you need. So I think freedom is not a 100% deal, and freedom does not mean that we don't have responsibility. And I think it's a redefinition of freedom, if you'd like.
There's another essay that jumped out at me in your book, and that's titled, Is Busy Better? What do you see as the pros and cons of being busy in retirement?
Well, there are pros and cons. One, you know, I've never met a person who's working who isn't busy, or if you're not working. We have a busyness syndrome, and there's some sense if you're busy, you are doing something worthwhile. I mean, the conversation you have with a person who's a new retiree, you say, and tell me, how is retirement? What are you doing? I am so busy, I don't know how I ever found time to work. So this notion of being busy almost has like an implicit positive meaning. But if you're busy at engagements or activities that aren't meaningful, you can be busy and thoroughly bored, okay? So the pro of being busy is if you are engaged in things that have meaning for you, if you enjoy them, if it has some benefit either to you or to others. The cons is you can be neurotically busy and terribly unfulfilled. And so I think it's knowing the difference, that busy in itself isn't the key. I think what I also am suggesting is that what's part of this is purpose. Are you busy in activities, engagements that serve some purpose? And I think that's the key. And one of the things we know, people who have a purpose in life actually live longer, okay? So busy is good, but it's busy with what and what kind of meaning. And it does not mean it has to be a volunteer activity. It could be busy taking care of yourself. It could be busy taking care of a loved one. It could be busy doing part-time work. It's engagement, it's activity. But underlining all of this is having some kind of meeting, some kind of gratification, and with some sense of purpose.
Helen, how difficult is it for people when they think about purpose and meaning? Do they have a hard time grasping that? And what types of things have you seen to help people along with that, to discover that for themselves?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges of retirement. Because when you're working, you don't have to think about purpose. You know exactly why you're there. You know what you're supposed to do. You know the expectations, and you know the rewards. So if someone says, you know, what is your purpose in life as you're working 50 hours a week, you say, you know, purpose in life is I get to work, do my job, and support my family. So now we take all of that away and said, you know, it's almost existential. You say, well, who am I now? You know, why am I on this planet? What is meaningful to me? And if you've never thought about that for the past 35 years or 40 years of your career, this is possibly a new thought and a new conversation. I think it is absolutely fundamental to have a meaningful renewment or retirement, to have some sense of purpose. And it can be a journey. Your purpose in the first 5 years may be a different purpose in the next 5 years. I think it's a journey. I think talking about it in renewment groups, in conversation groups, even with your book group, is very helpful. I think finding purpose can be hard as a solo activity. I think it's one of the biggest challenges in retirement. You can be busy, you can have a full calendar, but that sense of purpose may be missing. And a big piece of purpose often is giving back. That can be a very fulfilling aspect. So I only would agree with you, it's a challenge, it's a process. And I will also add, to meet, if you're retired and you're looking for that sense of purpose, go meet with some people who to you seem to have this purposeful drive. Meet with them, talk to them. Almost like when you were in college and you had an informational interview. You know, start to learn from people who have done it well. But it's an absolute critical piece. It's a journey. It can change. It varies. And there's no value on it. Let's say you can volunteer as a purpose. It's as equally important to take care of a loved one. It's equally important to take care of yourself. There's no value on the purpose. It's self-defined.
Great points.
Does that somewhat answer your question?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I always think about this a lot and have people say, how do you do this? And I think I concur with the fact that it's a journey and I can see the challenges and the thing, and I can also appreciate the fact that this is a process. So, I love the perspective. It's great.
Your recommendation of the informational interviews is so valuable, because I see that in my work where people forget the value of just really reaching out to people who have done what you're trying to do and really learn from their experience. And people are more than willing to do that. And it doesn't necessarily have to take a lot of time. You're not asking a lot, but you can just learn so much by reaching out to people who have that sense of purpose that you're talking about.
And I think what's so critical is that the individual has to be the initiator. And I think that the message is here. You just can't sit back and think it's going to fall in your lap. You have to kind of take charge, be the initiator, start the process, because no one's going to come to you with it.
And people are willing to help you, too. People are willing to help you, like Joe, you're saying. People, if you reach out to people, they're willing to talk to you, which I think is...
They love it.
Yeah, they love it. They love talking
to you. They share their world with you, sure.
And what I like about your suggestion, too, is that, as we know, people who are purpose-driven know other people who are driven by purpose, and they can often introduce you to the next one, and the learning continues. So that's a great suggestion. Really appreciate that.
Let me just add something that completely is contrary to this conversation. I've also heard a conversation such as, is purpose overrated? That's probably another conversation, but it's just someone who said, I've heard someone say, no, purpose is overrated. You know, we're kind of enamored with this purpose notion. I disagree, but I have heard that. Is purpose overrated? So that's kind of another debate.
It's always good to have the other side.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think in some cases, that's a definitional problem for people. They're trying to make that bigger than maybe what it is, and they can't get their arms around it. So there are, as you said, many, many different ways of looking at this, but that's good.
So as you can tell by now in reading your book, a lot caught my eye. And another essay that did is titled Joy. How can people create and cherish more joy in this phase of life?
We have a lot of environmental influences that can creep into our joy. And I love the definition of joy is the feeling of grinning inside. I think this has to be somewhat intentional. I mean, there are a lot of complexities of life, and people go through their own struggles, and you say, okay, this is a joyful time of your life. I think it's intentional. I think it makes the assumption that people in mid to later life have the capacity for joy. Joy is not a word that is usually associated with aging, and you don't usually hear joy and retirement. So it's trying to shake that image paradigm a little bit to say, this has the potential to be the most joyful period of our lives. And when people are looking for joy, you say, all right, how do I make myself joyful? One of the things you can look about is your past. Sometimes as children, what did you absolutely love to do? I mean, maybe you loved to roller skate, or maybe you loved to paint, or maybe you loved sports. To think about what has brought you joy. And today, so many different things bring people joy, whether it's music or art or looking at the clouds in the sky or listening to birds or hiking or yoga or grandchildren. I think we have to intentionally enhance, capture these joyful times. And again, I think if you don't know what makes you joyful, I think you have, I would say, experiment. Feel free, have an absolutely open agenda. Again, talk to other people, observe what they are doing, and take a few risks. If you've never taken an art class and you think, oh, it looks interesting, take a risk. You don't have to be an artist. So be a risk taker if you can't find what brings you joy. And on the other hand, take some stock on what actually brings you joy every day. And maybe you want more of it. I mean, if you've been only able to hike, you know, once a month, well, maybe you want to go on a big hiking trip. Or you love yoga, but maybe you'd like to go on a yoga retreat. Maybe you'd like to do more of what brings you joy today. And then at the same time, be open to more. It's interesting, when we are growing up or thinking about our careers, no one asks us, well, why don't you choose a path that brings you joy? It just didn't come into the working vocabulary. But it does belong in our vocabulary now at this life stage. And I think we have to know that renouement and retirement is a period of joy, again, if we make that happen. But I'm very optimistic. I think there's joy in every person's life. They have to find it.
And we've never heard anyone say that joy is overrated.
Joy is not overrated. No. No, it's bliss. It's absolute bliss. I find that when I end a letter, my columns, I wish people a healthy, long life full of joy. That's all the good stuff in life.
It's also the path to joy seems to me could very easily intersect with the purpose. One could definitely lead to the other.
Very, very much connected, and joy can be the motivator for purpose.
Well, well said.
So Helen, if someone listening is in that early stage of beginning to think about or starting to navigate the transition from a full-time career to this next phase of renouement, what advice would you offer them? Where should they start?
You know, I think I'll answer your question, but if you go on the internet and you look up retirement, I think like there's 3 million, 2 million sources. There's a lot out there on how to retire well. I have a library full of those books. And so you're saying, how do we distill that into a few principles? One is, I think we all need to realize that when you leave the workplace, most people, not all, are in uncharted territories. Some people know exactly what they want to do, but others say, I'm not sure. I'm kind of in the gray zone. Can be scary, yet it's an incredible opportunity. So I think first is realize you're in uncharted territory. Your retirement is yours, okay? It's going to be different from the person next to you. So uncharted territories, get comfortable with it. That's one. Second is do what you want to do, not what you have to do. I mean, in the workplace, there are expectations. We know what we have to do. So now it's what do you want to do? And I suggest stop and think about what you want to do with this gift of time and experiment. So the second is do what you want to do, not what you have to do. Three is to acknowledge that retirement is a dynamic period of life. Okay, what seems gratifying and important in years 1, 2, and 3 may not be so interesting or important in years 4, 5, and 6, and may be still different from years 7, 8, and 9. And what often occurs right the early stages of retirement comes the big to-do list. You know, catch up with friends, movies, declutter the garage or even your closet. But we know that can be for a limited part of time. So the third is know that this is a dynamic period of time of change. If we think of 20, even 30 years in retirement, if you think about what you've done, to what your life was like for the past 20 to 30 years, and you think now you have that chunk of time in front of you, it's dynamic. It's changing. Okay. The fourth is I would recommend acknowledging the importance of relationships. That is so key. If you're still working, if you want relationships with your work buddies, start cultivating outside activities with them. And again, be the initiator. And also to be open to make new friends, because unfortunately, in the life stages, we lose friends. People move away, people die, make younger friends of younger generations, but make new ones. And to also know, the relationships are important, and this is just a sidebar. If you've been a leader in your work life, know that you don't always have to be a leader in this next chapter, okay? So the fifth is, getting back to purpose, find engagements, relationships, activities that are meaningful, gratifying, gives you a sense of purpose. And know that you can change course at any time. Circumstances change, your preferences change, sometimes capacities change. What brings us meaning and gratification can change tremendously. One can travel a great deal at the age of 70, but at the age of 84, maybe not so much. And so you find something else that is gratifying. Maybe you belong to a travel club, or maybe you focus more on grandchildren. But to know that purpose and meaning and gratification are fundamental, they're important, but they can change over the next 10, 20, and 30 years. And the last is to always look at ways to give back. That is so much connected to a sense of purpose. It could be giving back to your family, to your community, to society, to your faith-based organization, to your political persuasions, but the notion of giving back. And we know when people give, they feel very good about it. So the sixth would be, think about giving back in a way that's meaningful for you and is for the good of the many. So those are six general thoughts about it. As I say, we have libraries of books and articles about how to create the best retirement. I think these are just a few to keep in mind, but just to know everybody's retirement is different. What is fundamental in all the six pieces that I've suggested is having, well, the two things. One is having financial security to the extent possible. And the other is to retain your health and level of functioning to the extent possible. And those are two elements which we'll never have control over, but we have a tremendous amount of influence. And to really embrace this next stage, we don't want to have financial worries, if possible, and we want to function at our optimum. And we know pretty much how to make both of those happen, particularly the latter. So I would strongly emphasize the financial security and health and optimum level of functioning would be key. So that's perhaps more than you.
That's a wealth of information distilled into very practical suggestions and recommendations. So very, very helpful. And I know people appreciate it. Thank you so much. I can see why your initial discussions at lunch and then the follow-up dinner lasted 4 hours, because we could talk with you for at least 4 hours. But I know you have a lot going on. So I wanted to just ask one last question. That's, how can people best follow your work going forward?
Okay, so I have a website called HelenMDennis.com, and I post my columns on the website. And if you want to know anything else about me, that's also on the website. But the columns are there. Also, the columns are on a website called Success. It's a Facebook website called Successful Aging, and that's on Facebook. But when you want to talk about Renewment, we have a new website, which is Renewment, www.renewment.org. And on this website, that really tells you about Renewment, how to start Renewment, how to start a group, key questions to ask. So I think that if you're interested in Renewment, it would be renewment.org. And the other thing, if any of the listeners are interested in Renewment, there is a book, Project Renewment, The First Retirement Model for Career Women. But the other thing I'd like to offer is to feel free to contact me at helendenn@gmail.com. Because if you're interested in launching a group or want to know more, I'm happy to chat with you. My colleague Bernice and I did not go around the country promoting the groups, but it's grown virally through conversations. And if I'm in a city where you have a Renewment group, I'm happy to join you. So I would say renewment.org would be the best way to follow the Renewment activities.
And for listeners, we'll have links to all of those mentioned in the show notes so you can access them easily. And Helen, thanks so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
My pleasure. And your questions were right on. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
Have a great one.
Very grateful to have that conversation with Helen Dennis, the other Dennis. Dennis, what jumped out to you as important takeaways?
The Dennis with one N? Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I felt like we could have spoken for a long time with Helen today. It was certainly worthwhile. A few things. She mentioned about the Project Renewment groups that she had. And what struck me was that the different phases of life, that depending on the stage of life and the phase of life that you're at, the different topics resonated with people. And topics changed, obviously, as people went through these different life stages. But that in the early 60s, and specifically in the 60s, challenges in transitioning. And it's great work that she's doing, offering a platform of support for people and developing the communities that are developing around this. So I think that was well noted. The other thing that I liked when she spoke about retirement being a great feeling of freedom, but it is not 100% of everything. And in other words, it comes with responsibilities. So therein lies its challenges, because I think she mentioned the unexpected happens. People could run into caregiving situations, both from kids that they need to take care of, perhaps parents or in-laws that they need to take care of, or maybe even grandchildren they need to take care of. So understand that this is a great period of freedom, but there are things that are going to happen that you're going to have to get adjusted to and kind of go with. So I think that's the reality, and that practical reality was very pertinent in my eye. The aspect of purpose, and that being one of the biggest challenges in retirement for people, the pursuit of purpose, the pursuit of what's meaningful to them. And she also said that a sense of purpose can be a journey, and what you see in the first 5 years may be very different from what you see in the next five years. And understand that and appreciate that. I think that's very, very good advice. Finally, I recommend people listen again to her. I think the last question we asked her was about tips for people, what they should be focused on. And she offered some principles. I'm not going to mention them all here, but it occurred to me, what jumped out at me was that this leaving the workplace is definitely uncharted territory. Your retirement is going to be unique. It's going to be yours. Get comfortable. It's going to be a time of change, and it's a time of dynamic period of change. And then do what you want to do versus do what you have to do. And that's something I've heard before. Certainly great to see her mention that again, but keep these things top of mind. I think it was very, very powerful. So I enjoyed the conversation today. Joe, what about yourself?
Well, first I'll echo your point that you made about purpose and that being really fundamental to a great later phase of life, retirement and beyond, and really looking at how to do that. I think that's the most important thing. But the three others I'll highlight, first being her recommendation to be the initiator. Go out, talk to people who've gone through this, get their experiences and recommendations and advice, particularly those who you see as being particularly purpose-driven. And I just see time and time again how valuable it is and how willing people are to share their experiences. And along with that, secondly, her recommendation on being willing to experiment, looking at it, as you said, as a dynamic phase of life, that you can try things without committing forever. You can feel free to change course and course correct at any time. I think that's important to know going in. But having this view of experimentation is very healthy in thinking about it. And then last but not least, her comments about joy, being intentional. And it's something that transitioning from work, getting used to that you can really be the boss of your own joy. You can create your own. You can be a joy factory, so to speak. But taking responsibility for that and really seeing retirement in that way. She mentioned that those two words are not often connected, joy and retirement. But I echo her comments about why not? You can make that if that's important to you. And we never hear complaints from people about, I have too much joy. Hold back the joy. That's just overwhelming.
Absolutely.
Amount of joy. Yeah. So we can all use more joy, I guess.
More joy, the better.
And I'll just close with her definition, which was keeper. Joy equals the feeling of grinning inside. So that's, I think, a good way to end our conversation about her takeaways.
And you just said that with a smile on your face.
I did.
A big smile on your face. So not only are you grinning from the inside, you're grinning from the outside.
Absolutely. And there we go.
Well done.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.